About 30 seconds, those slides will come up, and here's Dr. Brito.
Thanks, Roy. So we have 12 minutes each to discuss what we each consider a very important topic about the medical home or components thereof. So I'm just trying to hit the highlights in those 12 minutes. So bear with me if I speak a little bit fast at times and if I go through some of the slides a little quickly. I have no financial relationships to disclose. And the overall goal of what I'm going to do here is just to define an enhanced medical home and discuss the rationale for its use for medically underserved children. For those of you that were at earlier talk I gave, please bear with me for the next couple slides. Just a little background about what organization I work for and who I am. The Children's Health Fund is a national organization with a central office in New York City. We're committed to providing health care to the nation's most medically underserved children and their families through the development and support of innovative primary care medical programs, response to public health crises, and the promotion of guaranteed access to appropriate health care for all children. Children's Health Fund began in 1987, providing care to children and their families in homeless shelters throughout New York City, and it continues to do that today. The flagship program, the New York Children's Health Project, is the largest project we have in our network, and it continues to provide, through a mobile medical unit, or a number of mobile medical units, comprehensive health care to children and families living in homeless shelters, but has also grown to have a fixed-site clinic in South Bronx, the South Bronx Health Center for Children and Families, that sees approximately 10,000 patients a year. So we're a national program, 22 projects nationwide 21 years later. The projects, as you can see, are East Coast, West Coast, the South. We have three projects that started post-Hurricane Katrina and Rita. Can you hear me? If it helps with the, sure. Three that started post-Hurricane Katrina and Rita, most recently in 2006 officially. And then we also have done something new to the organization in the last few years, is taken some of the components of the comprehensive health care and replicated them in different places. In Philadelphia, for instance, we have our referral management initiative, which I'm going to keep an eye on the watch here, because I want to spend a little bit of time talking about this initiative that really emphasizes the need to be more vigilant about some of the medically underserved populations. But we've replicated in Philadelphia with a set of clinics that are a nursing-run set of clinics that focus a lot on homeless children and adults and underserved. And then in Colorado, we've taken our transportation initiative and replicated it there. Most of our work throughout the country is done through the use of mobile medical, mental, and oral health units. Even if a project is a fixed-site clinic, with one exception, they always have a mobile medical unit at least, or one or two, to complement it. And these units are set up, doctor's offices on wheels, with, as you can see here, a waiting area, registration area up front where the seats turn around, two examining rooms, a nursing station, a laboratory room or procedure room. So before we talk about the enhanced medical home, I think we need to look at the pediatric medical home. The pediatric medical home was originally defined decades ago by the American Academy of Pediatrics to address the needs of children with special health care needs. This specifically was addressing the unmet needs of children, for instance, that had cerebral palsy, spina bifida, that needed, originally the whole thought was, that needed some sort of comprehensive way and unified way to make sure that their medical records traveled with them as they went to different providers. It has evolved to the point where the AAP, the American Academy of Pediatrics Task Force on the Future of Pediatric Education, or FOAP, expanded its recommendation to include all children. In other words, all children need a medical home. And the reason that they've evolved to that point is because there's a lot of evidence for having a medical home, and this from Barbara Starfield's work talks about that, and I'll just read you the quote directly. International within-nation studies indicate that a relationship with a medical home is associated with better health on both the individual and population levels, with lower overall cost of care, and with reductions in disparities in health between socially disadvantaged subpopulations and more socially advantaged populations. Although important in facilitating use overall, insurance does not guarantee a medical home. That's a very important point that I've heard throughout this conference, that while we are pushing for universal health care coverage in this country, as we see in many other countries that are doing much better on health care indicators, we all know that that doesn't guarantee a medical home nor quality care. But there are some studies that don't necessarily prove that a medical home is actually the end-all be-all. In this cross-sectional analysis of National Survey of Children's Health, parent reported unmet health care needs for children with ADHD and asthma, and some of the results. So children with ADD or ADHD had 3.5 times more likely, were 3.5 more times likely to report unmet health care needs versus those with asthma. Children with asthma with a medical home had less than a 50% likelihood of reporting an unmet health care need versus those without a medical home. However, there was no difference between children with ADD or ADHD with a medical home versus those without. This is a very important point because when we talk about the enhanced medical home, I'm going to focus on the need to integrate medical, mental, and oral health services, something for which there is lack of research on. So in this paper, the evidence provides moderate support for the hypothesis that medical homes provide improved health-related outcomes for children with special health care needs. Additional studies with comparison groups encompassing all or most of the attributes of the medical home need to be undertaken. So the medical home model, these are the different components of the medical home model as per the AAP. And basically what this says is that a medical home should be a place that a child and their family can go to and get comprehensive health care in a user-friendly fashion that's accessible. Sounds obvious, but often kids will have insurance and have a medical home identified somewhere, but it's not necessarily accessible. Family-centered, coordinated, compassionate, of course culturally effective. The continuity refers to continuity both 24/7 call coverage, but also continuity between primary care providers and subspecialists. And this becomes very important in one of the models, our special initiative, the referral management initiative I'll discuss in a moment. Very important that in the AAP's definition of the medical home, they emphasize that a medical home is not a building, house, or hospital, but it's an approach. It's an approach. You can provide a medical home off a mobile medical unit. You can provide it anywhere you want as long as you have the right approach and the right healthcare team members to providing healthcare in a high-quality, cost-effective manner. And I emphasize this because we often get questioned, can a mobile medical unit actually provide a medical home? And the response to that is, well, can a hospital or an emergency room provide a medical home? Can a fixed site clinic do it? It all depends on the approach and the personnel you have. So the enhanced medical home. When we at the Children's Health Fund refer to enhanced medical home, this is what we mean. It means taking the medical home one step further, a big step further. It's not just trying to connect kids to their subspecialists, but it's bringing the subspecialists into the medical home, much like a lot of FQHCs have done or have tried to do. Mental health services, have them in line. There's actually some recent articles about and studies that look at the involvement in private clinics with a psychologist in a private pediatric office at the end of the day to evaluate some of the kids. It involves a lot of prevention, health education, but in a meaningful way, and it takes a lot, as we all know, more time to do that as part of the medical visit. Dental care integrated into medical care as well as mental health care, if we could get that far. An enhanced medical home requires more time than typical pediatric visit would, what we refer to as intensive primary care clinicians being trained and able to do a little bit more than what you would expect. For instance, pulmonary function testing for children with asthma could be done as part of a medical home with appropriate training. Again, it would require a little more time. Bringing primary and subspecialty care into the community as opposed to bringing people in the community to the subspecialist. And an integration of traditional subspecialty care services, mental and oral health care. My search and literature, there's not a lot of evidence or any studies done on this use, but we believe anecdotally that it does make a difference, and we're starting to see some others interested in doing that and bringing it to their primary care practices. And I'll say a few words later about effective use of health information technology, using it as an adjunct to providing health care. So We divide up the risk factors affecting medically underserved children into three general categories: economic, geographic, and psychosocial. And the next few slides, I'm going to go through them very quickly, and if you want the citations and where you can read more about this, I'd be glad to provide them for you. But these are built on a conceptual model that relates health status to social and environmental factors, and is supported by findings from different researchers that find that multiple social risk factors have a cumulative detrimental impact on parent-reported child health status across physical and social emotional domains. So having an income, family income less than 200% FPL, no or inadequate insurance, geographic barriers. We serve a lot of sites in rural areas that have transportation issues. We also, and most for the most part, are in HIPSAs, health professional shortage areas. We also serve urban areas that have transportation issues in spite of what it may appear that they would have better. I'm going to skip through this, but this is a map to emphasize the lack of subspecialists in different parts of the country. Again, the Northeast has a bigger concentration of primary care clinicians and subspecialists than other parts of the country. Psychosocial barriers, there are specific vulnerable populations, populations exposed to domestic violence. Maternal depression is something that's been looked at in the pediatric literature recently. And of course, literacy levels and language barriers are huge. Health information technology, electronic health records. At the Children's Health Fund, we worked over the 20 years to actually develop different programs, and we have one that is our fourth generation electronic health record that is focused on underserved pediatric populations, outpatient-based, which is a little unusual, and only recently has there been more attention paid to outpatient EHRs. And I've seen Roy here, so I'm going to go very quickly. I have two more minutes, I guess. Three. Okay, great. And then telemedicine is something there is evidence for the use of particularly telemental health services to provide health care to children that may need, for instance, psychiatric consultation, because we know there aren't enough child psychiatrists around. And we're actually doing this model in southern Mississippi with our project there, where they have a consultant in Jackson, Mississippi, a child psychiatrist, and it's working out very well. And we hope to have some of those findings as a paper in the next year or so. But I have citations. I'll be glad to share them with you if you want to ask me afterwards. So very quickly, referral management initiative. It's one of the special initiatives we have at the Children's Health Fund that is actually, we have evidence for its effectiveness. This initiative systematically analyzes the referral process and for providing enabling services at each barrier point that we kind of intuitively know. We actually looked at it systematically. And the New York Children's Health Project, like I said, it's the largest project, but we look specifically at the children in homeless children's shelters, and we found that they had almost two times the referral rate for comparable but non-homeless pediatric populations. Despite the high asthma prevalence in these homeless shelters, less than 3% were being referred to see a pulmonologist for asthma, also indicative of the kind of intensive primary care we practice as our model. Before we started this initiative, we only had a 7% adherence rate with subspecialty care appointments. And post, we had a 61% adherence rate. And these are the identified barriers that they looked at and we worked at to overcome. And the interval between the date of referral and date of appointment we found was very, very important in determining whether or not there was a successful adherence rate to subspecialty. Lack of transportation, insurance status, transfer of information between providers. We know primary care to subspecialty providers often is lacking effective communication. Language, cultural barriers, and difficulties navigating the healthcare system. And we had an individual case manager, more than that, or a number of case managers well-trained to help break through these. For instance, transportation, if that's an issue, bus or tokens or metro cards or what have you were provided to the families once that was identified. The interval time, through a model developed in Europe, if the physicians, the clinicians were trained to better identify those that needed urgent versus those that could be delayed to help prioritize for the subspecialists who should be scheduled. So having given that, and just as one component of this enhanced medical home model, these are the conclusions. We definitely need more research on the effectiveness of the pediatric medical home as it is now defined by the AAP. There's no doubt about that. There's been some evidence for some of the components, lacking evidence in others. More work needs to be done there. We believe that medically underserved children, because of all these psychosocial and economic factors, should be classified as a special health care needs population, much like the original definition the American Academy of Pediatrics gave to children with special health care needs that needed a medical home. We do have some preliminary evidence suggesting that the use of an enhanced medical home model for medically underserved children is effective. Again, it's very preliminary, and there aren't a lot of people doing work in this. It's very complicated. There's a lot of factors, but I think we need to do more. And certainly, lastly, we know that further investigation on the effectiveness of different components of the enhanced medical home model are needed. So it's both the traditional and the enhanced. And with that, I think I kept to my time, hopefully. So, all right. Thank you all very much.
That's Arturo Brito. He's Chief Medical Officer of Children's Health Fund, and formerly for quite a period of time was Medical Director of the program in South